Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. Our subject today is reality, and we are so glad you could join us today. And we'll begin with one of our beautiful prayers from Florence.
This is from the platform. This is Eddie. In Science and Health, okay, page 330 and an excerpt for 331. God is what the scriptures declare him to be, life, truth, love. Spirit is divine principle, and divine principle is love, and love is mind, and mind is not both good and bad. For God is mind. Therefore, there is in reality one mind only, because there is one God. The scriptures imply that God is all in all. From this, it follows that nothing possesses reality nor existence except the divine mind and his ideas. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you. And Karen are watching.
Watch number 436. Watch lest you forget in your need to solve difficult problems and to study the letter of Christian Science, to take time to soar mentally into the realm of spiritual uplift in order to contemplate heaven peopled with spiritual beings governed in perfect harmony. We need to refresh our hearts and souls with this vision at frequent intervals, lest we dwell on error until we make a reality of it, or become weary in well-doing. It was for this reason that Mrs. Eddy once said to the students in her home, "Let your minds go out every 2 hours. All is peace, goodwill, love, etc. Say nothing of error. Confine your thoughts to the right side. If you make a treadmill out of your science work, you are liable to keep errors alive day after day, working on them endlessly, as a woman would do on a sock she is knitting, if she never towed it in. We must work on error and then have done with it, in order that we may progress through the unlabored motion of the divine energy and fill our thoughts with good." Once Mrs. Eddy wrote to James Neal, "Can you realize what glories come with Christian Science? And do you see the day dawning and the day star appear? Yes, you do. For love includes it, and you do love much." Mrs. Eddy perceived that Mr. Neal needed to contemplate this vision, lest he grow weary and faint in his heart with too much contemplation of the claim of error and of the material problem. And I shall read from Science and Health, page 426. The discoverer of Christian Science finds the path less difficult when she has the high goal always before her thoughts than when she counts her footsteps in endeavoring to reach it. When the destination is desirable, expectation speeds our progress. The struggle for truth makes one strong instead of weak, resting instead of wearying one. And on page 32, she says, "Jesus prayed. He withdrew from the material senses to refresh his heart with brighter, with spiritual views."
Thank you. That was beautiful. All right, comments on that?
Well, I looked up last night how many times Jesus withdrew into the wilderness, into the desert, and it was 9 times. And but I'm going to send this to you, Mary, but there was a beautiful picture of Jesus just sitting in this beautiful scene, just doing just that, just contemplating, you know, just listening to his father And it is so important. Our days get so busy. And we forget that we need to get in touch with our Father periodically throughout the day. I know I forget sometimes, and it's so important. What is real, you know, in all that I'm seeing, what is really true about what I'm seeing? And it's just very important. But anyways, okay, I didn't know it was dying times.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah, and those are only the nine times that are actually recorded in the Bible.
Yeah.
How many times did he withdraw and it never got recorded in the Bible?
Yeah, I'm sure countless.
Yeah, well, could have been moving with them and still withdrawn and be with the Father. You know, he could have been silently doing it even with them. So, Yeah. Two things come to my thought. First, the fact that, you know, 10 affirmations and one mention of error. I think the emphasis should be on the truth. And also the second thing that comes to my thought is, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. It didn't say, and we shall make the truth make us free.
So it's
so amazing that often you don't realize, but you're dwelling more on the problem than, you know, elevating thought to God.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'll never forget in Mrs. Evans' classes, at one point she would, I've told this story before, but we all had to get up and give a treatment, and mine was, you know, maybe one mention of God, and then the rest was all about the problem. And I had no idea I was doing it. You know, I thought I was giving a good treatment. And, well, I got told, and that's when I learned that lesson, 10 affirmations to one denial. You always start out with the all power of God, and then you lightly touch on the problem, and then you go back to the allness, omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence of God, because that is what must be in your thought, remain in your thought, foremost, and always.
And that is what it means when it says you handle the problem.
Yeah, it doesn't handle you.
So that it doesn't handle you, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And with all we get bombarded with, between, you know, your phones and your TVs and your computers and just going out and the public, really, all these things you get bombarded with, you must take this time to refresh yourself. I mean, it's not even it's an absolute necessity that you do this. Every time you turn on anything, it's all begging for you to give it a treatment, right? Got all these things to treat constantly, because so much of it is just rank error. So take that time, keep it turned off, all these things we have, and don't feel pressured. I'm really having to do that. If I can't answer somebody right away, I'll get to it when I get to it. It's most important that you have that peace of mind rather than just rushing from one thing to the next without clearing your thought and having that peace. And truly, if you have children or know of children or whatever, any contact with children, keep them off those devices as much as possible.
You also mentioned Mary. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
You also mentioned that expectation was something that you were told you needed to work on in your earlier work. And Mrs. Eddy mentioned expectation speeds our progress. So every once in a while, I do check in to make sure that am I expecting to be healed? Am I expecting that this truth that I am knowing, I can let it go and let it do its work? But am I expecting it? And I just, every once in a while, I have to check myself, make sure I am expecting you know, that expecting to be healed.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, because we have these negative scenarios running through our head, what we think are going to happen. I hear it a lot. I hear it from Christian scientists that they're expecting this, that, or the next thing in a negative manner to happen. And that is not having your expectation from the Lord. You know, the picture of, we have it in our Sunday school room, of Daniel in the lion's den, that beautiful picture. And where is he looking?
Up out the window.
Up out the window at God. He's not looking at the lions. Uh-uh. Mm-mm. No, that would have, he would have been eaten alive if he had.
Yeah. So, that's true.
Okay, Sarah, you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
Yes, I am really grateful to hear both all of the comments as well as the readings from both Florence and the watches. Yesterday I was in a peace group and I noticed that I was getting so carried away with the images of what we were looking at, and I had to really watch my thoughts. So instead of continuing on with them, I thought after a while, I'm just going to have to come home and just be in the secret place, you know, to go as Jesus did and be alone. And then I woke up and I couldn't speak. And I thought, well, God speaks and God knows all. And I cannot let my thought be mesmerized or seduced by, you know, the pictures of wars going on and thinking that we are hopeless. And then it's, I could speak in the morning again.
Good. Yeah.
And then one thing that we learned here is you get what you expect.
Yes.
Well, you get what you need. But the way to expect healing is to get to the point where you recognize that there's nothing that needs to be healed, nothing real that needs to be healed. We just need to clear our vision and see things correctly. And that is the best expectation.
And that is reality.
Yeah, that's what the prayer said, I think. The only reality is mind and its ideas.
Right. And then everything that we see or appears to us in our, you know, in our vision or that comes to us in our hearing has a spiritual reality. And that is the key. That is the key to everything, is to see the spiritual reality of whatever seems to come to us.
And that's giving it a treatment. It's seeing reality, which is what our topic is on today.
And as Zari said, sometimes you have to stop looking at it to see the reality of it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's more of a revealing than a healing, right? Because since we know we're not looking for matter to be healed because there is no matter, we're more looking for to be in that consciousness of God where we can see only as He sees it.
The importance of this regular, you know, uplifting thought to God. I feel that then you're really looking beyond the error. You're looking to what is, what God has created, not what is trying to deceive you. Is it Mr. Evans who said even at work you could take a few minutes to, as if you're on the phone with God or something? I remember something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he told it every hour or so, take 5 minutes and just, you know, go to a quiet place, mm-hmm. pray, and have a conversation with God.
Yeah, make sure your thought is stayed on Him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or, you know, pick up the phone and act like you're on the phone, but just pray. Have various ways to do it at work. But most important, this is the unceasing prayer to keep our thought with the Father. You must never get too hurried or busy or distracted or worried that we are losing this
Because we don't have to do this work. We get to do this.
We get to do it. Right.
It's an exciting thing.
Yeah,
it's exciting every time you see science work. It's wonderful.
Yes, it is. All right. Well, we're going to start. Nancy, you start because you took up the golden text and your contribution this week.
Okay. From Deuteronomy 32:4, He is the rock. His work is perfect, for all his ways are judgment, a God of truth and without iniquity. Just and right is he. And I looked up quite a few words from Webster's 1828. Rock, in scripture, defense, a means of safety, protection, strength, asylum, immovable foundation. Perfect, finished, complete, consummate, manifesting perfection. The word just, upright, honest, righteous, religious, influenced by a regard to the laws of God, or living in exact conformity to the divine will. The word truth, fact or reality, exact accordance with that which is or has been or shall be. Fidelity, constancy, honesty, virtue. Iniquity, injustice, unrighteousness, wickedness. And the word immutable, unalterable, not capable or susceptible of change. Then in a commentary, Benson's commentary, he is a rock, stable in his nature, invincible in his power, and fixed and immutable in his counsels, promises, and ways. So that if there should be a sad change in your affairs, remember that this proceeds from yourself and from the change of your ways toward God, and not from God, with whom is no variableness nor shadow of turning. His work is perfect. All his works, whether of creation, providence, or grace, and all his actions are unblameable, perfect, wise, and righteous. All his ways are judgment. His dealings with you, his people, and his administrations in the world toward all mankind are just and holy in the highest degree. A God of truth, ever faithful and constant to his promises, and without iniquity. Although we are often ignorant of the methods and reasons of the divine procedure, yet it is as impossible there should be injustice or iniquity in God as that infinite and unchangeable wisdom shouldn't act foolishly or essential goodness should degenerate into malice, or in the scripture language that light should become darkness. Just and right is he, righteous in all that he doeth. How should he do wrong, all whose actions are necessarily founded on perfect and immutable wisdom, justice, and equity? And that is our great God.
Thank you. It's beautiful. And I just love it. I can hardly get past the golden text this week that he is a rock. Mm-hmm. We need a rock. This shift sands of time, as they say, with all this, that, this way, that way. But God is the rock.
He is the rock.
The rock.
Yes. Perfect, because they keep trying to destabilize people by upsetting them, and this was such a counter to that.
That's true. A destabilizing thing going on here, which is mortal mind. And we had such a good Bible study yesterday. Thank you, Thomas, and everyone. Because we could see how it happens, how the confusion starts, and it always starts in turning from the rock.
And Collectania, Miss Zeddy, told someone four things to know if they were being handled by AM, and the first one was confusion, and then forgetting, and then not doing your duty.
And then being happy right. about it.
Oh, a moral illness. That's the fourth one.
A moral illness?
Yep.
So again?
Confusion, a forgetting, a moral illness, and then what was the third?
Not doing your duty.
Thank you.
Those are signs that you're being handled, and you know you can feel it because when you are you feel this agitation, and you feel like you can't concentrate or something, like something's just buzzing around your head, and so yeah, you feel confused, you forget the things you have to do, and again, go to the rock. I love that song. I don't think they're singing it today, but you know, go to the rock. When you have these problems, go to the rock. And in what Nancy read, it was interesting because it said that if a sad situation has come upon you, it's not God that's brought it about. It's always the lack of God. And this isn't a time for condemnation or anything, but it is a time to maybe shore up a little bit, or you know, see maybe what got you into believing there was a power other than that one power, and to doubt him in some way, and just get back on it. And we can, because we are his image and likeness, and just knowing our oneness with him brings it all back to us. So thank you for that, Nancy. Now,
you're again, welcome.
Carrie gave me, you should see every week she gives me practically a book of articles and prints them up for me. And, you know, they're beautifully done. She excerpts, she makes comments. I mean, this, I'm sure it takes her quite a while. She does it every week. So, again, I thank dear Carrie. She hasn't actually talked to you all, but she's always with us. and she really leads a life of doing kind things for others. That's what she loves to do. And then just to remain in the background.
She sends good historical documents. I mean, articles.
Yes, yes. And she's been invaluable with the Liberator, the articles.
Very much so.
All these articles. I mean, it's like this bottomless well. It just keeps coming. These articles and things. And the point being, these are the early workers that their writings would be lost if they weren't resurrected. And many of them have such fresh, unique ideas to share. And it's very wonderful. It's very, very kind, which is we have a church full of people like this. Those of you who attended our membership meeting heard from many of them. All the wonderful things that they're doing quietly in the background, making this church what it is. And we are so very, very grateful.
And sometimes quietly in the foreground.
Sometimes noisily in the foreground.
Not so much.
No.
Well, I'll give my pitch, but it sounds like we should be including some of the stuff that Carrie provides in our catalog.
Mm-hmm. Well, you will see when you put the Sentinel and Journals in there. That's most of what it comes from.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they're all in the Sentinels and Journals.
That's where she gets them. And she always does that, you know, under the copyright law. So we're always
free from copyright.
Yes.
Which is convenient because the vast majority of the good things are...
They're old enough.
That's right. They really good are. You can feel it. You can tell it with these early workers. They have a deep understanding of the science. And truly, what is our rock? Isn't our rock Christian Science? Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times a week I think I hear people say, "Thank God for Christian Science. What would I do without Christian Science?" That is our rock. And when we feel troubled or upset, we turn to our books, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
And find all the comfort we need and the guidance, everything. It's all there, right there.
It's just a great day when the
science and health is out with the Bible. It's the same.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yep. And that's what we keep praying for. That's why we have all these watches, to know that this word of God will get out and will be understood. And it won't be all this talk, well, it's too hard to understand, or it's archaic, or whatever. It is not. It is not. In the lesson this week, there's a lot about spiritual sense and the ability to see, right, spiritually, with your spiritual senses and not materially. It's very beautiful in Science and Health. I love those passages about mind alone possesses all faculties, perception, and comprehension. And there is more Christianity in seeing and hearing spiritually than materially. There's more science in the perpetual exercise of the mind faculties than in their loss, and lost they cannot be while mind remains. Sight, hearing, all the spiritual senses of man are eternal. They cannot be lost. Their reality and immortality are in spirit and understanding, not matter. Hence their permanence. These are beautiful statements that Mrs. Eddy gives us that we can prove in our life. And I was reading this week, this is from Gilbert Carpenter, where he writes, if, as Christian Science teaches, man is in the kingdom of heaven now, what good does a knowledge of that fact do him unless he has senses that will bear testimony to it? That's true, right? In order to have that fact of any advantage to him, he must be able to cognize the wonders of spiritual harmony. Now, this is going back to the watching point. Man is assured again and again in Science and Health that his true senses are spiritual. Hence, he must possess such senses as will bear testimony to his presence in heaven now. But through disuse, these soul senses have become atrophied.
Atrophied.
Thank you. And it is man's task to resurrect them and bring them back to full activity as he blots out the opposite false material senses. So this is the importance, you know, if we want reality, if we want to be in the kingdom of heaven, which we are, as he states here, we're told this, we are, we have to have the spiritual sense working. And you have opportunities to use your spiritual sense every day. And then Carpenter goes on to say, you know, how do you develop spiritual sense? And he says one way, it is through questions and problems that defy human sense that man turns to spiritual sense. So you think you have a problem now that defies healing? Well, that's now your chance to use your spiritual sense to see what is actually true and what is actually going on. You'll develop your spiritual sense when you have problems that defy human reasoning.
Man's extremity is God's opportunity.
Yes.
And that's why we love to do it when they're babies and children. And they develop it at that point, it just becomes natural.
Thank you.
Mrs. Eddy, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Are you done?
I was going to say, Mrs. Eddy says an acknowledgement of the perfection of the infinite unseen conveys a power or confers a power, I'm sorry, that nothing else can. And it's that infinite unseen that we have to know that we can see, because it's real.
Unchanging.
Yeah, and as one of our Sunday school children once said many, many years ago, you know, you might not be able to see God, but you can sure feel him. And that's how our spiritual senses work.
And in many ways, you know, we do see him in the loving smile of a person, or, you know, you see beyond the so-called material evidence to the spiritual, which is always present and ever at hand, as Mrs. Eddy says. And the more that we practice this, the more we will see it. There's that beautiful story I think I read last week of Mrs. Eddy healing the child of a boil, and the love that she expressed, and the love that she saw all around her, Mrs. Eddy. And then it enabled this woman, the mother, to see it as well. Well, in another way, Carpenter says that we can develop our spiritual sense is by reading the Bible and studying the Bible. Hmm. Now, why do you think that?
I had a nice revelation come, this is Andrea, this last week, that is along the lines of everything you just said. I've been thinking about that, the love, seeing the love everywhere. And the one of the quotes in the Bible this week is God said, let there be light, and there was light. And as I was reading that, it occurred to me that God is interacting with himself. He thinks, let there be light, and there is light, and he is the light. And the inspiration came to expand that out so beautifully that God is expressing himself. He is interacting with himself. God is sustaining himself. God is maintaining himself. God is governing himself. God is the cause and effect. God is loving himself.
How does that help you in healing, knowing this?
Because it's the only thing to know, or the only thing we have, or the only one there is to experience. And that's how God is all in all.
Okay.
Right. And the way that that helps us is when we recognize that we are the manifestation of God. That is the truth about you and me.
Yeah.
God is thinking himself as you, someone once said. So we're not God. We are not God. But God expresses himself through us. And when we get out of the way and let him, and that's very important to know.
And the way we develop spiritual sense by reading the Bible, get back to the question. The Bible was written out of inspiration. Most of the Bible.
Right.
What? Except for the begats. But most of the Bible was written out of inspiration. And in order to read it properly, you have to read it with inspiration. And so it's a good way to practice having inspiration.
Thank you. Because that is the answer. That's what Carpenter says. You can't understand it unless you do see it spiritually. That's the great value of our Bible studies. Christian Science is not intellectual process where we just sit and think and think and think. It's unfoldment, revelation, inspiration, all these things where the reality of all things comes to light. And in this, we experience tremendous healing and growth and deeper understanding and knowledge of God. But yeah, almost all these Bible studies that we have are about stories that need to be spiritually interpreted, right? Otherwise, they don't make a lot of sense. Like the Tower of Babel, I never really studied that one very much that I recall. And it had so many wonderful, deep lessons that apply for right here and right now. So there are many ways that we develop our spiritual senses, and you can use it all day and practice it so it doesn't get
atrophied.
Yeah. Thank you. Which means, you know, wasted with no use, right?
It shrinks up, yeah.
Yes.
You don't use it, you lose it.
Yes. So, Shardell, did you want to give us what you gave about our spiritual senses?
So it's from Proverbs. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord hath made even both of them. And then on our website, I found by Paul Stark Seeley, seeing and hearing permanent as being. People often, and that's a quote, these are quotes, people often believe that seeing and hearing are their personal possessions, which dwell in organs called eyes and ears. They believe, too, that these important personal possessions are subject to impairment or even destruction by forces over which they have little or no control. Science teaches that the material sense of seeing and hearing is not the real or actual. True seeing and hearing are found in the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-hearing mind called God. Man's substance is mind, not matter, and so are his seeing and hearing. Mortal mind, the one liar, claims to control all that belongs to divine mind, including seeing, hearing. But claiming is not having. Mortal mind claim. Immortal mind has God possessing it and possessing all. And then Jesus was not afraid of blindness or deafness. To him, they were not the facts of being. They were not conditions of man. He understood the spiritual fact of being, seeing, and hearing, all dwelling in mind. He knew errors' misconception of them and could never touch the spiritual fact. We find our true senses as we find our oneness with God. In this oneness is our superiority and immunity from error's lie of impaired seeing or hearing.
Thank you. You know, we claim our oneness, which is why this concept is so important. You cannot be without hearing, seeing. You cannot be without health. You cannot be without joy. You cannot be without supply. It would be impossible. It would be impossible. So just knowing that and having such total trust in the rock, the unchanging rock, can bring it to pass. As Gary was saying, what already exists will come into view. And this is experiencing, yes, heaven on earth. So thank you, Shardell. And
thank you.
Carrie sent some beautiful articles about joy, because in the responsive reading, it says, "Be glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing and her people a joy." Something else you cannot be without is joy. God created you to be joyous. So we do have times when maybe we have sobering times, but generally speaking, there should be a great sense of joy within you always, because it's part of being a child of God. Not a giddy sense, but a deep-rooted joy in the Lord.
And this is really, I have found to be really important to get to the point where I'm just really happy that I am in the image and likeness of God, and that I am surrounded by his creation, and it's all good. And I'm not so affected by the material things around me. I mean, I enjoy having, you know, the good food, but that's not the source of my joy. And when I can get to the point where I'm just really happy to be with God, then I have a joy that can't ever be taken away from me. All hell can break loose, but I still have that joy. And I could be depressed about a lot of things, or I could be upset about a lot of things, but I still have that joy to come back to. And nobody can take it from you when you have that joy.
Yeah, no man. Go ahead, Florence.
Yeah, I think the sense of
where do you dwell, right? We dwell in the kingdom of God. And Radvon, one article called Joy, he says that there are no tears in the kingdom of heaven. Mm-hmm. And that is really nice, because you see, the permanency is our oneness with God, and that's unimpeachable, as the lesson said. It's real and unimpeachable. So if we have our thought on, well, where am I? Where do I dwell? In the kingdom of God, and there are no tears there.
Thank you. Yeah, that's beautiful. And there are no tears. All tears will be wiped away, right? There's nothing to be sad about, because you will see the goodness of our God. And all these things, these sin, disease, and death is all that we'll ever lose, and that we gladly lose. But everything else belongs to us as a child of God. So along with the joy and gladness, what goes hand in hand with that?
Gratitude.
Yeah. And that was a very basic lesson we learned. I mentioned it many times, that joy and gratitude are essential to any healing. And I know, and I did it myself. Well, I can't be joyful. I'll be joyful and grateful when I get my healing. No. Because, in fact, as we've talked about, you already have the healing, and you have to see it. And you won't see it while you're depressed and crying and feeling sorry for yourself. So you get out your gratitude journal. You get out all that you need to think about, all the ways God has helped you through the years, because He has. Remember them, write them down, and get your joy going and your gratitude. And you'll be feeling better. Just by doing that. Don't you remember as a child how those healings would come? You know, so all of a sudden I'd stay home and start playing with my crayons or something. I'd just start feeling happy, and pretty soon I was feeling all better. So just get that joy. Again, dwell on the enduring, the good, and the true. You will bring those into your experience proportionately to their occupancy of your thought. Mary Baker Eddy. So hold on to that. Even though pain is screaming at you, or lack is screaming at you, or whatever is trying to scream at you, just tell it to go you know where. It's very important, because in all these ways that we're talking about, these are the ways that we experience and experience reality. And believe me, there's no way that you can be truly grateful and not be glad and happy. It's impossible. It's impossible. Just as it is, you cannot be fearful if you are loving, real love. It's the antidote. Go ahead, Florence.
No, I'm just chuckling at that.
Perfect love casteth out fear. Yeah. So if you're feeling fearful, think, why? What's the matter? What am I not loving? How can I love more? What is it that's missing here? And that love will replace the fear. It will indeed. So
love that will drown it, right? So perfect.
Right. Yes. We'll love it. Yes, love will drown it.
Because love is not selfish. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with self. It has everything to do with God and seeing His creation as He sees it.
Yeah. So, and I know some of these times are troubling, and sometimes think we're not getting our healing as soon as we should, but we've got to put all that aside and keep on trucking, as they say. Mm-hmm. Persistence wins the prize. Yes.
Well, that's something I found being here, is that is part of the joy of knowing that God chose you for this time to be here handling these things. Mm-hmm. And knowing that that's, you know, it wasn't a fluke or a mistake that these things happened. They're here for you to grow. So that's wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's a mighty work. And most often, especially as you are growing in the science, when you have a problem, it seems like a personal problem. Why?
And it's so easy to get sucked into the self-pity for a number of reasons. And it's wonderful when self-pity becomes a red flag of, no, I'm not going there. And you can't ever solve a problem from within the problem. You've got to get out of that problem and not focus on it. And that's why it's so wonderful to pray for others, because you get out of your seeming self and know what's true for all mankind.
Thank you.
That's a blessing.
Yes. Yeah. It wants to suck you into the problem. So you're so obsessed and this problem is in front of you. Wake up in the morning. There's this problem all day long, all night long. There's this problem. It wants to just have you so glued on this problem that actually you're paralyzed with fear. You don't even know it. And the only way is to get out of that, is to pull away from it and start your focus on God, which is how we started this. God, and have time to refresh yourself and pray for others. It wants you to be all, look what's going on in the world today. So it wants you to just be obsessed with your own problems. So you leave all this world work flying around out there, and you can't. And it's all one. And when you pray for yourself, you pray for all. And when you pray for all, you pray for yourself. So don't get so entangled with your personal problems. I don't care how they're screaming at you. Just scream back louder.
There's a watching point that we've given a long time ago, and it said, this can only do me good and bring me closer to God by overcoming it. So if anything looks bad, if I can get back to that and say, there's a blessing in this, then I'm on my way to getting out of it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's good.
In this article on that Carrie sent called Gladness and Gratitude, it's very beautiful by Ella Hoag. And it starts off with this little poem. It is a comely fashion to be glad. And joy is the grace we say to God. Mm-hmm. So remember, when we're joyful, we're saying a beautiful prayer to God, thanking God for all his goodness. And when we're being all depressed, we're not seeing his very presence, right?
Yeah, you separate yourself from him, actually.
Yes, you do. And this is something beautiful, too, called individual work. The same voice that bids us rejoice tells us in what to rejoice. And here, what do we rejoice over? But be glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing and her people a joy. In such rejoicing, we see no cause for sorrow. Only that which is unchangeable and eternal can make us happy. For happiness has its source in the bosom of love divine. What is it that produces a state of unrest and discontentment? This condition is based on the belief that something is lacking. Here again, in the thinking otherwise, for to man, God's idea who reflects, here again is the thinking otherwise, for to man, God's idea who reflects all, there can be nothing lacking. Everything in the divine mind is eternal. Joy can never become sorrow. Good cannot become evil. Abundance cannot become scarcity. Love cannot turn to hate. Life cannot change to death. Nor can health become sickness. Thinking otherwise is the devil to be cast out of heaven. We cannot change our own dispositions and environments, but if we desire to wear the image of God, love will do it for us. If our constant prayer is that love may have an abiding place in our consciousness, if love will effect its own entrance by destroying everything that is not of God, it lessens fear to think of each experience as a stepping stone to a higher sense of love. Let us pray with our mother in Israel, give us each day our daily bread, in knowing what thou art. So let love do it. Let love come in. Let love tell you. And spend those times alone with God. And He will speak to you. And all will be well. So we're going to end on this article called Letter on Sight by Mary Baker Eddy, attributed to Mary Baker Eddy. And I believe this was a letter that Thomas found in his grandmother's trash can, as I recall. And it's very beautiful. So
the whole thing?
Yes. What time?
All right. Letter on Sight by Mary Baker Eddy. This letter was written by Mrs. Eddy to one of her students in Denver, Colorado. My dear, you took off your glasses and held on to your faith in them instead of losing your faith in them and the necessity of wearing them. The veil that seems to be in front of your eyes is back of them. The veil is the physical senses. They cause you to worry. The condition of the body only expresses a mental condition. Can you adjust yourself to everything that comes your way? It is the mind or spirit that sees, and your eyes are only the instruments with which you see. When you are trying to do something that you do not understand, you say, "I do not see how to do it." And when you get a clearer idea about it, you say, "I see it now." That is the sight or insight that sees. Seeing is understanding. And if you could see why you cannot see, you could see. For the body is renewed by the renewing of the mind. You should be as unconscious of your eyes when looking at anything as you are of your tongue when talking, or your feet when dancing. And you can only do that by realizing that God is your sight, that God is intelligence, and your eyes express the intelligence of God. Do not think of me as treating your eyes to heal them directly, but as treating you to give a better understanding of what God is and your relation to Him. When you see, understand yourself as one of God's ideas, instead of thinking of yourself as flesh and blood, you will not strain your eyes to see, for you will realize that it is your consciousness of God that is your real life, and that it is mind that sees. There is only one mind, but there seems to be two. One is a reflection of the other. The divine mind is the one, and the other is only the human sense of the divine. We may call them the mind of the spirit and the mind of the flesh, the objective and subjective, the conscious and the subconscious, and the one that knows and the one that thinks. When you gain an understanding of the principle of sight and think of your eyes without doubt or fear or anxiety as improving or being perfect, that thought sinks into your inner consciousness and becomes part of your real self. And you do not think, you know it. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he, end quote. The original ideas that come to you through the spirit or consciousness, you know before you think. And the ideas that you get from others or through the senses, you must think before you can know. You can think or believe a lie, but we can never know it, because it is unknowable. A child can think that 2 and 2 makes 5, but it cannot know it because 2 and 2 are 4. We think in the senses and know in the spirit. God does not think. He knows. And we receive from him all that we desire when we make ourselves ready to receive it in his way. It is getting a clearer insight into the understanding of God, of what God is, that heals the defects that are manifested in the eyes or any of our physical senses. It is not the sense of sight, but your sensitiveness about your sense of sight that has to be healed. The sense of feeling affects all the other senses. And if you are sensitive about appearance, what people say or think about you, or what they do or say to you, or about climate or cold, what you eat, what you wear, what you work at, or what you receive for it, or any other thing that displeases you, if you let it stir you up, it will go on to the weakest part of your body. Mm. A pain is only a frown expressed on the place where the trouble is. And the only remedy for it is to realize that there is only one mind and that all things work together for good to those who love God. The senses tell us that we should be healed because we are so faithful in our reading. Then we look for results, and that puts healing first and the principle that healed second. Matter first and mind second. Love for truth makes mind first in our affections, and then health and all the other things we desire shall be added unto us. We must get away from ourselves or outside of ourselves, absent from the body and present with the Lord. We should each make ourselves one with God, and then look upon our body as if it belonged to another person. When we see ourselves as God sees us, we can see our body as perfect as our conception of God. Lovingly, Mary Baker Eddy. Oh,
beautiful.
Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.